everybody. This is David Garamella, and I am the founder of the Giving Collaborative, but also the host of your favorite philanthropy podcast, Philantherapy. And we've been really blessed over the past few months to really have an opportunity to interview, sit down and interview and talk with some amazing people that are doing incredible things, really globally, to make the world a better place. They're all mission driven. They are all focused on a common good. Today's podcast is one I think you're totally going to enjoy. We have the opportunity to sit down with Jimmy Westerheim, who is the founder of The Human Aspect. And it sounds kind of intriguing, right? Well, The Human Aspect is the world's first life experience library, right? So they have a mission to interview folks all over the world about life's toughest challenges, and they try to bring invaluable lessons of what they learn through these stories right to your fingertips. They're based over in Oslo, Norway. So some specific challenges around fundraising globally that maybe we're going to dig into during the podcast. But again, Human Aspect, they have this incredible interactive library that allows anyone to go online and search literally thousands of interviews based on what you're experiencing at the time. It's all about stories, right? And lessons shared. And hopefully you're going to be able to find someone who's endured a similar struggle to you. So they combine filmatic storytelling, the vulnerability of the human experience, and they combine the two and create these amazing life experience videos. So real easy for you to access the Human Aspect, right? It's www.humanaspect.com. You can search by words such as anxiety, depression, abuse, divorce, whatever, you know, kind of traumatic or not so traumatic experience you're feeling right now. Then you're able to see the experience and hopefully get valuable lessons out of it. Talking with Jimmy, they have this incredible vision to bridge the mental health gap between like the professional services that we seek and just everyday people, right? Because we all have challenges and struggles. So I don't want to stay too much on that. I really want to allow you to hear the conversation with Jimmy, and hopefully you'll be inspired by the Human Aspect as much as I was. Thanks.
Thank you so much, David. It's a true pleasure for me to be here as well. I guess, how do you tell a person's story? I was born and raised in the countryside in Norway, and I guess that's quite similar to the US. You know, it's a tiny, tiny place, 500 people living in my tiny municipality. And if you're outside of the box and you're not really fitting in or you don't feel like the rest, you will quite quickly end up on the outside. So basically, my teens, I was struggling quite heavily, being alone. My father wasn't there. He was an alcoholic. I was struggling, you know, similar issues that we have all over the world. And Right. Eventually, when I was 13 years old, I found myself sitting in a tree, planning my own suicide because of years and years of bullying and staying outside. Luckily for me, as you can see, I'm still here, and my life turned around quite well in thanks to sports, which is also quite common in the US. You're good at that, giving people opportunities through athletics. So my life changed quite quickly. I started to see a career, dreamed about becoming a soccer player, as you call it over there. And then, of course, went to athletes college and things started looking great. And especially from someone coming from a poor working class family, I would be the first to get a degree. You know, things were looking bright. And then I went into a mandatory military service. I was a special forces soldier there for just the mandatory time. And then I was a rescue diver in the Bering Sea. All right. And then my sports career went a little bit out because I got mononucleosis, like a kissing disease, which is quite common among athletes. So then I started studying shipping. because it was quite accidental, to be fair. You know, like most teens, you don't really know what to do, and I thought it sounded interesting. So after just 1 year in school, it was supposed to be 1 year in Norway, 2 years in England, my dream, right? Moving abroad. I guess a lot of people dream about that.
We do.
And then suddenly I was actually headhunted and offered a job by the biggest shipping company and group in the world, quite a famous Norwegian, which is behind this. It's kind of baffling for me. I was sitting there suddenly having a job offer from someone that I couldn't even grasp. We have been talking about them the whole year in school. So 6-7 years after that, I find myself in Singapore working in shipping, living the dream life of all my friends, I assume, you know, being an expat and even getting messages from people that bullied me. I remember saying that now suddenly they looked up to me, right? So you're feeling like you're paying, the debts is paid. And then suddenly I had this big injury, shattered a disc in my spine to cut a lot of the nerves in my right leg. And then obviously I was alone. I've been raised to be like a man's man, right? On the countryside. Right, right. So talking about emotions and how you really...
We don't do that. No.
We don't do that.
No.
Former military. No. Right. So, and then suddenly I was alone and then started thinking of the big questions. Like, number one, why am I here? Like, this has never been what I really wanted to do, even though I'm very grateful for the experience, but it wasn't me. I was doing it to prove myself, I think, somewhere deep down, subconsciously. And that's where I started thinking, okay, I need to make a big change. So I changed to Doctors Without Borders after that. Wow. Quite lucky to bring my then education and experience into
were
that.
You in both, were you both in Greece and Afghanistan? Did I... read that somewhere.
Yeah. So wow. I was 1 year in Afghanistan. Experienced, of course, quite some traumatic things there.
I'm
and
sure
also worked
did.
Then with the refugees in Syria and in Turkey and Greece after that. But still, I didn't feel this was really me. I thought that was my dream and their great organization. But
absolutely.
There was something that I wanted to do on my own to start. And that's where the big question of how and why don't we talk about things when we're struggling? Because it wasn't just me. Now I had seen it in all the countries that I worked in. No one talked about it when they went through something tough. We're always sitting alone thinking that I will handle this on my own, right? And that's when I ended up starting the Human Aspect in 2016. Obviously not with the ambitions of where we have ended now, but as an initiative back then to then interview real people about how they have dealt with the toughest challenge they've faced in life and what they have learned to, you know, experience-based knowledge to find inspiration and make that available for free digital, which is then today the library.
Jimmy, what's the criteria for you to interview somebody? Because, you know, from my experience, we all have challenges, right? We all have mental health issues. Regardless how successful, you know, you think you are, or your family's perfect, or you went to the greatest school, you were a star athlete. I don't know. I don't know one person, at least in my circle of friends and family, that couldn't benefit from some sort of mental health kind of reality check and service.
Completely agree. No, that's also why we called it, it's called the Life Experience Library, right? We didn't call it the Mental Health Library. That's on purpose because we wanted to broaden the horizon. We didn't want to kind of, again, box things in because that's one of the reasons why I thought stigma was high. Let's call it life, like you're saying, life challenges. So it's called the Life Experience Library. And today it is the largest free digital resource in the world, 5 years later, where we have 600 of those interviews available for free on the humanaspect.com, the website or the library, where, of course, it's 30 to 60 minutes long interviews. So we're not talking little social media snippets here. We're talking in-depth, inspirational, real interviews about how people have faced challenges. And the way we find people is basically either they come to us or we ask people in our circles or we say we're coming to Denmark, to the UK, Sierra Leone, and this is what we do. Let us know if you think you have a story. And the only real criteria is that you are you have gotten to a place with that challenge and that you feel that you're out of it so you can reflect back on it. That's the only real big criteria that we have.
Okay. And there's three questions that you ask every person that you're interviewed.
Or is it, there's three sections. I asked like 70 questions or something.
Oh, all right.
In the interview. But yeah, the main three elements is what has been your life's toughest challenge? How did you deal with it? Or how are you living with it? And what have you learned that you wish you knew when you were in the challenge? That's the three sections.
So as an, you're an NGO, right? So you're not receiving any public assistance per se from the government. You need to fund this, right? This is not an inexpensive endeavor.
Absolutely.
How, so I guess there's a couple questions there from my perspective. How did you kind of break down barriers to get people to support it? Because typically you would get it from family members that were helped by a certain service or something like that. And because you're international really in scope, every country, we all have our own cultures when it comes to philanthropy. So how the heck do you figure that out?
That was the big nut to crack now, wasn't it? I'm not going to say I found the big solution yet, but moving into it, I was lucky enough to come from the shipping world, right? Where it's like hardcore capitalistical realm. So I learned a lot from that world and also came from sports and Doctors Without Borders. So I kind of knew three different worlds of funding things. So I would started to think, okay, so how could I utilize the different ways of looking at how to receive funding? So the first big block we found that was essential for us and that we wouldn't be here if that wasn't there is that I realized that every company around the world that are at a certain scale, they would want to volunteer away their time pro bono, their expertise, things that I normally would have had to pay for as a consultant or I would have to pay someone in-house to do, right? So the first thing we did is we started pitching to companies for them to build the library pro bono because they thought the idea was great. Their employees was like, yeah, I would love to do this 2-3 hours extra a week, all in. So we found fantastic companies, Design Container and Good Mornings, like companies in Oslo doing developing websites, and they did it for free. That was block one. That moved us very quickly. And suddenly the web page was up and running in like 2 months, right? We wouldn't have been able to do that on our own. And then was the next level, like you're saying, okay, so how do you get income, right? So we started the traditional route. We took some inspiration from the US. So we were like, okay, fundraising dinner. Sounds like an idea. Have a concert, sure. You know, have a good network. Started there and found out that, you know, so we were basically dragging our heels and didn't really see that the market in Norway isn't as open to that as you would assume in the US. So it actually took 1.5 years all the way to summer 2018 before we found an important pivot that was vital, the next big one. And that was, we had become so good. And of course, up to that, it was just volunteer capacity. We were basically pulling our own hours. I was living off God knows what and savings and things from shipping times. And then,
it
goes fast, especially in Oslo. You haven't been here yet. Luckily for me, I had been living in a couple of other places, learned how to live cheap. And I've been a student as well, of course, where you learn some tricks. And of course, I found other people that were willing to put in their time. We were, you know, hundreds of hours each month was put in volunteer. But then we realized after 1.5 years, we had found out that we were very good at social media.
Okay.
And we had kind of put that block in from the beginning. I wanted to combine the power of social media to reach people, the power of video creation to then, of course, convey emotions and make people engaged. But also then I wanted it to be authentic. I thought that a lot of the content online up to that point within mental health was like, it was either a bit too much or it was just unreal. It was actors or celebrities or people. There's, you know, it's nothing wrong with that, but it wasn't my kind of tea, right? So then the summer of 2018, we had to do a pivot, right? So we were thinking, okay, so what are we not thinking about? Because the path we're going on, it's not working. We're applying for grants, which is the standard procedure. We weren't getting any because we were new. They didn't understand who we were. So we were basically falling between cracks. So we had to find a new way. And that's when actually the American embassy, funny enough, was the first client on this. So we realized that there's people out there that want to do video campaigns on mental health, but the more not so nice way. So let's say to them that we are already doing this with videos, so we can do exactly what we're doing today, but we can then put your brand on it. So we realized that we had brand value suddenly for a sponsor, more or less. So we came up with the concept, sponsor your video. And we started reaching out then. Sure. And the American embassy here in Norway was the first client that sponsored 10 videos for Generation Z, so for youngsters.
Okay. So what does it, is there kind of a baseline cost to create one of these videos?
Yeah. So that's basically what we were pushing in, because we're non-for-profit, right? So we were pushing in, okay, this is average cost to create one video for us. If we were actually to give people money and not be volunteers, that we have been up to that point, right? And we asked then the American embassy and they said yes. And that's when we realized, oh, this works. And then we got a package, right? We got some feedback and we adjusted like any organization. And then we went to UNICEF and they jumped on it. And then we went, you know, ABCDF. And we started then getting funds through that channel. And then some private grants started coming in after they saw what we did with UNICEF. It gives you quality, right?
No, nobody wants to be first in. And they want to see, you know, is this organization going to stick around? Is their mission something that shows value? You know, is there a sustainable mission? You know, kind of a trend that we see not only in the United States, but we're seeing with our partners in the UK and elsewhere in the EU and especially down in South Africa, is that the corporate dollar that just for, oh, because you're a good cause, doesn't happen anymore. It's all, you could call it cause marketing, you could call it sponsorship, but you have to over and over again show value. You know, how many people are watching, how many people are affected, and they'll buy into that. And that's, you know, that's what's sustaining corporate. I don't know if it's philanthropy, but it's okay because it's helping good organizations.
Absolutely.
You know, in perpetuity. So good.
And then, of course, we were growing. So we found out we can't rely on this either. And we carried on applying for grants. And of course, what we saw in grants, I think it's similar in the US. It's just over time, if you're an actor that's still around and they can see quality, and then slowly you're going from no to maybe to yes for the grants. So slowly they will shift into. So I believe that's about network, obviously.
No, absolutely. Most funders will not support you the first time around for all the reasons that you just stated. But I also think that I challenge, you know, some of our partners on a regular basis on this. Their asks, the ask that they make the funder is not realistic, right? They're not considerate of the funder. You know, there's a finite dollar amount or resource amount. So, you know, build a relationship and those numbers will go up and your organization will get long-term support.
Oh, you're so right as well. And we didn't fully realize that in the beginning, right? We were forward-leaning. Sure. We had big ambitions. We put in numbers that we thought was fair, and they were fair. And they weren't that big amounts. But as you said, if we maybe applied for 10 times less, we might have gotten a yes. And then the next year, correct, we could have increased the amount, right? So I completely agree on that. And then the big next big block was, okay, so this is working, but then still like kind of the growth was like, you know, not really there, right? So we needed something else. And the grants weren't coming in the way that we hoped. So now we started looking for, okay, so what else can we do? And we were lucky enough to stumble across another US company, Facebook, like medium plus size company, right?
I heard of them. Okay,
exactly. And we were thinking, okay, there's a lot of reports coming out, especially in Norway. There was a big kind of documentation piece coming out about how Facebook was a problem, how Instagram groups were connected to suicides. So it was quite bad press for Facebook, okay, obviously. And then I realized, and we discussed it here internally, we said, okay, so do we really think that social media is the problem? Like that was what media said, right? That was the image portrayed. And we all agreed with the psychologists and the people in here that no, we don't think that's the problem. There's something off about the way that they portray this. So I went to Facebook's office. We actually met them at a conference. So, you know, I took the American style, being forward leaning, say, hey, we should meet. And the guy said, yeah, that's not the dumbest thing I've heard. And actually, fun fact, we made a book, a coffee table book, to try to sell it, you know, another side effort to try to survive, not the most successful. But we realized that book is an absolutely fantastic business card. Because if you leave a business card, I don't know about you, but I have a lot of those that I've never looked at. So we made a book and it was like this big, like a coffee table book, right? It's huge. And we started giving that. And I gave the guy the book, the head of Facebook Norway. I gave him the book and I said, hey, here's a book. I wrote in it. Check out our project and give me your email and I will tell you what we want to talk about. And he invited me to the office. I guess he was not sure what we were going to talk about, but he gave me time. And then I pitched a concept for them. And I pitched the concept of positive time spent on Facebook. And I told them that people are already there. So changing the behavior of human beings, you can just forget about it, right? We've tried that for decades. That's not the way to go here. So in average, people spend 3.5 hours on Facebook here in Norway. So I kind of pitched it saying to them, okay, so how about changing what they watch? So you are now told that you're the bully in mental health. You're the cause for all these teenagers committing suicide. But what if we change that they're looking at something that I can prove is positive, that they will search help and they will start doing positive things in their own life instead? And then his eyes was like blown away. And then, of course, we presented this cause saying, if you guys sponsor us, we will travel Scandinavia and interview specifically Generation Z, and we will make a series together with you, with your brand on it. And then of course we will push that out and kind of contradict this, doing something positive instead of trying to be smart, you know, just arguing blah, 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 or the normal campaign they do, or support a couple of other mental health organizations. But I'm told them, okay, so let's do something on your platform that's actually helping. And he loved it. So it went straight in and suddenly we got the biggest donor that we've ever had. And it was a massive shift for us. And they sent us on an interview tour to the entire Scandinavia.
Oh, wow.
And that was, of course, the next big change for us. And the last big block after that was, of course, that we managed to get some change in actually selling something. Because even if you're a foundation, of course, you can sell something as long as it goes for then only goes back into business of what you're doing. But we had tried to sell the book and I was thinking in my head, I was like, I don't want to sell something that's not contributing to the vision. I'm done with that. I'm not going to spend more time doing side hustle.
Okay.
So then we're okay. What can we sell? And then we're thinking we can sell talks to companies and schools about how to take care of mental health at the workplace or in the school, because this is what we do. We have a lot of knowledge on it. And I have been doing talks for Doctors Without Borders and in athletes since I was like 10 years old. So I'm quite good at it as well. And then we started pitching that. And of course, starting with saying we will do it for free if you want to watch it. And then we took it from there and COVID arrived. So luckily for us in that sense, because then suddenly everyone demanded a video, digital, right?
We had a
film team.
Sure.
We had a film team. So we made that change in a week where other speakers were struggling. So suddenly we took capitalized on the market. And today that is the biggest income source we have. And suddenly we have an income source that's not project dependent, right? That's the problem with grants or donations or sponsorships. They're normally blocked to
very restricted, right? Very few people will support operations. They'll say it's up to you, Jimmy, in the organization to figure that out. So good for you. So we're based in Oslo. So I live there. I live in Scandinavia. It's easy for me to support you. What about if I live in the UK or I'm in the United States? Have you been able to set up mechanisms so my family says, wow, this is something we want to get behind and we could make a gift? Or could you explain a little bit of that?
Yeah, and of course, again, PayPal and all these normal traditions. Actually, the two biggest private donors we've ever had, of course, you can donate to us in a Facebook fundraiser or just through a PayPal and the traditional services. I've actually both from the US. We had an early donor from the US, an artist that was extremely kind and donated for us $1,000 back in the day. That was a massive amount for us. Right. This was the first year. And we had, again, last year, someone who every year donates to an organization with his whole family, his two kids. So the kids choose the organization and they, you know, give away something for Christmas. And they also, again, donated $1,000, which was incredible for us, right? But at the moment, we're setting up on the webpage. It's been working with for two years. So now you will have the option of a single donation and then, you know, more subscription kind of donations. So every month, like $1 or $5 or whatever amount you feel comfortable with supporting. So we're now moving into that. And we have tested a small crowdfunding as well, of course, which... Okay. Is pushed on Facebook. That's where we've had the most success. So the Facebook fundraiser system, where we have been successful, also abroad.
Do you need to use, I don't want to say a third party, because that's not what I mean, but a lot of times I've seen with even some of the organizations that we'll work with, they have to set up a partner organization in London or in the US, and the funds can transfer through that. So they're able, you know, as a donor in a certain country, they want to get the tax incentive as well. That's not necessarily why they give, but that's an added benefit.
No, that's the things that we're looking into now when we're moving into more of that realm where we can get bigger sponsors from families also, but for companies even more so. But we're more targeting in on the systems that are already in place. So the beauty, of course, I also have been a donor my whole life to organizations. So if you go through PayPal or Facebook or these things, you will still get the receipt. So you can kind of on your own put it into your tax system. But we're definitely considering to have like a small, you know, post box service in specifically the US and the UK, the two biggest markets that we probably have had support from up to now. So definitely looking into that. But it's going to be a big day, and I think it's like just in 2-3 weeks where you will have the donation function on the website.
Have you started to look at kind of, you've created this, right? So you are the storyteller of these stories. And people will want to hear from you, and they're going to want to hear why this is so important outside of just maybe looking at it. Have you started to meet with individuals, or is that just not something you're ready to do yet as an organization to try to not convince, but tell me why I should support you in maybe a larger way?
In you thinking about more, you know, financially strong individuals? Yeah,
sure. So, you know, one of the things that, you know, we like to press on folks is that, you know, giving is about relationships, right? And you build, just like you are with the corporations, right? It's about trust and knowing that the organization is stewarding the funds the way they said they would. And I just think you have a great story to tell. And we know online giving and social media giving has gone up, you know, exponentially, especially over the pandemic, but the majority of giving, and this is international, is still happening via having a cup of coffee and talking about it face to face. Is that something you're aspiring to, or something that you're already doing?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we're talking to people in general, obviously, before COVID as well. I was meeting people everywhere in like conferences or different levels. We have a couple of those conversations, but we're now moving more towards what you're saying, both in terms on the website for transparency.
Okay.
Also, not that we're not transparent, but just also showcasing it on the website, like full reports, some small snippets at the blog that we're working on now, that's not just, as you're saying, not just angled at the user, but also things that are angled at a potential a private donor or a company donor. Great. So we're communicating to them also outward. And LinkedIn, of course, is being used a lot more for that. And like you're saying, private networks. We've been working so much more also with politicians and people. And that's another very good lesson that we have learned, that I mentioned earlier that we weren't kind of falling in between chairs. And one of the reasons why we were, and this I guess goes for a lot of people who do something new, is that we were just not in their boxes, right? So all the grants people, they have an application and they says, you know, you can apply for A, B, C, D, A, F. And if you don't, if you're not here, then I'm sorry, you can be the coolest project on the planet, right? But you're not going to fit my box.
Right.
So now we're talking, last year we started talking to a lot of politicians to be able to get a line somewhere in the budget, state budget or municipality budget, that basically doesn't say human aspect, but that says experience-based digital support or low threshold digital tool or something where you could just put us and say, that's us. So we're missing that box. So we're trying to basically lobby in a positive way to get that box, not just for ourselves, obviously, but also for anyone else that's in that box at the moment.
Are there opportunities for you to kind of act as, I don't want to say the word consultant, but for like school districts or universities to say, okay, the human aspect is doing something really, you know, kind of amazing globally, but they could help our smaller community as well. So maybe I don't want my child on a video necessarily that's public, but I think this would be a great experience for them to grow. And
no, at the moment we're doing that because we've gotten to the point, you know, the library is built, is there. We have users in every country. We actually have had that since 2019, thanks to social media, obviously.
Right.
And now we're building with the, you know, the professional development team is now building user guides on how different professions can utilize the library as a tool and all the other things that we're building in the library.
Okay.
And now we're in contact with schools, with teachers, with companies for HR roles. So how they can, you know, use this fantastic free tool in their work. And on top of that, as you're saying, then of course, we're also positioning ourselves as an advisor, someone that could come into a company, as you say, or a school or a district, even a municipality,
sure.
and give them advice on how we would do things. So definitely both as a paid support gig, but also, of course, also as a some kind of a mutual project where they would find funds to a big project and we could come in as an actor. So definitely we were thinking about a big one actually, and then in New York, because we heard New York was struggling a lot with teen suicides for quite heavily for a while. So that's one of the projects that COVID put a stop to, sadly. So we're very, very eager to join a project like that and talk
please,
at schools.
Please do. I share this with you. So my wife is a clinician, and a big piece of her practice is mental health issues. And there are just not enough. And I know you're bigger than that, right? This is global human care, but there is just not enough services out there. And the post-traumatic stress, the anxiety, the depression, and not to just say, oh, it's because of COVID, but it's just kind of made it so much larger.
Absolutely.
So what you're doing is so, so very important. I'm going to play just a kind of a game or a kind of magic wand here. If we were just sitting down kind of quietly somewhere and you said, David, if I could raise $5 million or 5 million pounds, whatever, what's the magic number that allows you to kind of do what it is, you know, fulfill your mission or your vision, more so than a mission even?
I think you were spot on. I almost read my mind. No, it's like if at the moment, because we're, of course, we're working on different sustainable elements to get human aspect up at the level. But if we were able to raise between, you know, $2 and $4 million, we would have enough to move to the element of our strategy where we would be sustainable, because we're building this professional platform where there's a subscription model where, for example, then your wife would be able to subscribe on this model to utilize this as a tool where she would pay, you know, maybe $100 a month to have that service. And from there on and out, human aspect will be plus minus sustainable if our models are accurate, but the gap is between where we are now and when this big platform is finished, of course. So
sure.
If we had raised that amount in between here, then in theory, we could have helped and, you know, inspired and potentially sadly saved thousands, nice, if not millions of people around the world, if we were able to get quicker to that stage. That's no doubt.
One of the things that I was fascinated by is you have this amazing team behind you, right? So I'm on doing some homework, looking at your website, and I see these incredible people. Are you able to leverage them and their stories from a fundraising perspective? Because again, everybody responds to certain, we don't always respond to one person. Maybe it's somebody a little different. I was just curious because it's, you have some great folks on there.
No, absolutely. And as you're saying, that's the most important building block. I think if you had asked me what has been your biggest asset or your biggest skill since I was a kid as well, but like in this element, it's, I've always been the person who have managed to convey others to join a mission or a vision. I was even like that in the sandbox, you know. So we've had volunteers here that have been here for years, and I think it's more common to be a volunteer in the US, to be fair, than it is here. So to get someone to be a volunteer in Norway over years without salary is almost impossible. So that's what shocks people the most, of how long people have been here. Like, of course, says something about the mission and the vision, but of course also what we provide them in terms of the culture. So Kaylee is smiling here now because what we're doing now for this summer is actually making more videos about their stories as well, like you're saying. So tapping into why are they here? Why have you been here for 4 years? You know, are you crazy? Why didn't you leave? And kind of tapping into, as you're saying, the variety and the diversity of this incredible team that are, you know, we're 60 people and we're from, I think, 25 different nationalities. So it's quite, it's amazing. I'm still shocked every time I come in to look
at
how many
people. And you should smile every time you think about it. What are you in is it a virtual organization or is there a physical space as well?
We have a physical space at a co-working space, basically. Okay. So it's the biggest one here in Oslo, where we have been the last almost 3 years. Before there, we were at like another social co-working space. Right. And before there, you're obviously in cafes at a home. That's how how it starts, right?
I love it.
And of course, in COVID, we've been much more digital. And we also have volunteers in other countries that are not sitting here, that work from home. And all our systems, of course, are digital. So that's not the problem. But we definitely have a space here as well, which is a big part of why so many people have joined, because our culture is quite unique. At least I think everybody would say that, but we feel so.
Is there anything else that maybe we didn't cover or you would like to bring up before we kind of wrap things up today?
I think kind of the other element is that I've traveled the world. I lived in a lot of different countries, and coming from shipping as well, of course, the word that is talking about, you know, relationship-based culture versus, you know, the American sales culture where you just do deals, right? It has been so eminent to me to see that I have probably earlier in my life not seen the power of knowing people, because I've always been a chatty person, as you probably have heard in this episode, right? According to my mom, I've been chatting since I came out. And then, so the reason why we've probably also been able to do so many things is because I've always talked to people. And I didn't have a thought behind it, but I've always been fairly kind to people and talked to people and remembered them. And thanks to social media and LinkedIn and those things, I've actually then had them in my network, even though I haven't seen them, right, from all over the world. So when I started this, suddenly I can post a message. I don't know how many times I've done this the last 5 years, but it's quite incredible. You're posting, you know, we need this and this. Does anyone know someone working in a marketing company? And then bang, on Facebook.
Absolutely.
2 minutes later, you have five names, right? So utilizing network in a positive way and also valuing it, but not going about it with too much of a strategy, because I don't believe in that. I think people will see through that. So genuinely being curious about who people are and what they do and then kind of you know remember to send them a birthday message when Facebook tells you to, basically.
If I have anyone out there that's listening to the podcast or we're talking, a lot of times we have conversations with donors, both in Europe and here in the United States. That's a lot of what we do. And they say, well, what are some good organizations that we should be looking at? How do people get in touch with you?
You can just send me an email, or of course, you can send to Kaylee as well. But like my email is on the website, of course, jimmy@thehumanaspect.com. And you won't believe this, but I'm actually the one person on the planet with the two names, Jimmy Westerheim. If you search those names on Google or anywhere, you will find one person. So LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, one person. So you can't miss it. So you
it's
can
you.
Find
it's
me anywhere.
You. All right. Yeah. I love it. Well, I am, again, Jimmy, I'm honored that you shared the human aspect with us in the Giving Collaborative and philanthropy. We learned some things too about what you're doing and how you're pressing technology to spread the message. So this was great. And I am so grateful that you spent some time with us. And again, if you're interested, please look up the Human Aspect on their website. I'm going to www.humanaspect.com. Is that it? Perfect. Make sure you go there. And if you have any specific questions, you can always email me at info@givingcollaborative.com. Would love to hear your thoughts about today's podcast or our guest. And if you're interested in being a guest on our podcast, please reach out. We'd love to have you get involved. So with that, have a great day, and we'll see you next time at Philanthropy.